good morning, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And we're here till 5 a.m. My friend, Mr. Steve Cochran, is back this morning. And I couldn't be happier. I'll be hanging out with Steve and the gang after 5 a.m. to recap what happened over the weekend. It is Monday morning. That means my dad will be calling in a little bit later to tell a joke because it's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It'll be joke number 101. We had a great little piece of festivities last Monday morning when my dad told his 100th joke. Lots of fun. Really, really cool. And my thanks to Jason Skaggs, Dan Chagrou, and everybody involved in making it such a fun. And Steve Cochran for recording a really fun message. And so we start, we reboot now. We're going to do a reboot. You know, it's a Spider-Man movie. It's a new Spider-Man movie. Because there's a new Spider-Man reboot. Is it every 3 months, Dan? It's every 3 months there's a new Spider-Man movie. So my dad will be calling in. We've got a very, very good Blackhawks Express to play. That'll be coming up. And we're going to be doing some Christmas stuff. Each morning, we're going to do like a Christmas topic and talk some Christmas stuff and play some Christmas music leading up to Christmas Eve because I'm working all the way through Christmas Eve. Dan's taken off a little earlier because he's a hot shot. So we're going to be here and we'll do like a Christmas topic and talk Christmassy stuff leading all the way up to Christmas Eve morning before I take a break until the new year. So, all right. But Monday morning means Monday morning movie reviews. And Eric Childress, Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com, RogerEbert.com join me every week. We talk about all the new movies and we talk about the box office as well. And we welcome Eric and Colin. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hi. All right. Now, before we jump into it, we want to let everybody know that Colin is going to be taking a break in the new year for a little while, concentrating on some other stuff. And so you will not be joining us in January or around February, correct?
Correct. Yeah, after our year-end best of, worst of show.
That'll be January 4th, by the way. That'll be January 4th.
Yeah, so after that, I'm just going to be taking a little hiatus.
Okay, but he'll be back.
Film critic hiatus.
Film critic hiatus, I don't blame you. Taking a little break, doing some other stuff. So it'll be Eric and I covering it. And Colin, if you see anything during that break, I know that now you won't be like, well, I got to make it to this screening, and I got to get to this thing, and I got to get to that thing. If on your own time you see something, send me an email with your thoughts, and we can at least share them with people.
Sure.
Okay?
Absolutely.
All right. Before we get to the movies, and we've got a lot actually to talk about. I thought this was going to be like, I didn't think there was much to talk about, but then I'm looking at the list and I'm like, oh yeah, a lot of stuff opened this week. I get confused as to when things open around this year around this time every year. Don't you agree?
Oh yeah, I forgot a few things were open in Chicago because I've just considered them opened already.
Well, you know, a lot of these I have sitting on my coffee table at home.
Right.
So it's like, did that open? I don't know. I saw it. You know, so I have to say that this year I have taken the most advantage of screeners, I think, in years.
It's been a very good year in that regard.
Yeah. I mean,
studios opened up their vaults.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple. The only two that I got to see before the 4th, and it's kind of important, are The Revenant and The Hateful Eight. It's kind of important that I see those two, and I haven't seen them. So those and I know that they're not scheduled to open in Chicago until January 8th, correct?
Well, the 70mm Hateful Eight, I believe, is opening Christmas Day.
Oh, so it is?
Yeah, music. So, I think that's an exclusive 70mm thing.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. Then I will see that. But
yeah,
then
make sure you get your tickets ahead of time.
No, I will. Trust me, I will. I'll do it as soon as I hang up with you guys. I will. The other thing is The Revenant is not opening till the 8th, right? It's not going to open Christmas Day here.
Correct, but I think you might get to see it sooner.
Okay. I sent a note to the PR people and said, hey, guys, if there are screenings between now and January 4th, please let me know. So, and then I got responses from both of those PR people that said, we will let you know. So,
okay. Well, you might get to see it sooner than that.
Okay. All right. Cool. All right. Well, anyway, but that's good news. All right. Eric, there is a new version, and I never say the name of this, so I'm going to say the Scottish play. You can say it if you want. I'm not going to say it.
I got it.
Colin, you haven't seen it?
I have not.
I have not either. I'm really curious about it. Michael Fassbender is in it, playing the lead role of the Scottish guy who does bad things. So this is based on You can go ahead and say it, Eric. Give us a review.
Can I not? Is it just because you're in the theater? Is that why you can't say it?
I just don't say it. You know what?
If I
don't
say it, does that curse you at all?
I don't think so. Well, maybe. No. I don't know. Just go ahead.
You might want to be clear on the rules here.
No, here's the thing. I just don't say it at all anymore. I don't know if you guys remember the play Operation Infiltration.
Yes.
All right. I am convinced that that was a cursed production. Because it was from the very get-go, it was kind of a nightmare all the way through. It ended up okay. It ended up to be a pretty good show. But what we went through on that with, like, a couple of deaths and horrible things and not goodness and a stage manager that I don't think understood English, even though he was born in this country, it was such a horrible experience that I just don't even say the word anymore.
Okay.
But you can say it all you want. Go ahead. Right, I mean, I don't know if you got – I mean, I directed a play 2 years ago that I remounted called Toast of the Town. Where a major part of that play was a character defying that curse and saying it 800 times. But go ahead and say it. I sound like I'm 9. Go ahead. Your review.
We're referring, of course, to Shakespeare's Macbeth.
Right.
There we go. And we have a new version directed by Justin Kurzel, I think is his name. And it's Shakespeare's Macbeth. We all know the play, do we not?
Yeah.
Macbeth is the a warrior in King Duncan's army, and after a decisive battle, he gets a vision from some witches, and he's got a really terrible wife, power-hungry wife, named Lady Macbeth. Very, very clever name. And she basically convinces him to kill the king so they could take over and rule the land and, you know, bad things happen. It's one of Shakespeare's tragedy. There you go. We know the play. So now you have Michael Fassbender as Macbeth. You have Marion Cotillard as Lady Macbeth.
Who, by the way, I've not seen the movie, but who, to me, seems like great casting.
Yeah, well, I think you can put those two in anything.
You know, no, that's true. But particularly, Eric, I'm thinking about Inception.
Yeah.
So that's just me, you know.
Okay, sure. okay. And it's rounded out with other, David Thewlis plays the King Duncan, and Sean Harris from Mission Impossible Rogue Nation plays Macduff. So now we, do we need another version of Macbeth or, any Shakespeare play? And the answer to that is, all depends on exactly what can be done new with it. The acting, you cast people like Fassbender and Cotillard, you're going to get really good performances. And the two of them are particularly good during, the more famous monologues in the film. Mm-hmm. But this is a version of Macbeth. It's not like, Kenneth Branagh doing, something really spectacular with Hamlet. It's a very... it's a mood piece. It's very dour. The play's been shortened down to just under 2 hours.
Yeah, I'm looking at the running time, and I'm it's 113 minutes. It's short.
Yeah.
It's shorter.
Surely, I mean, the only possible way you're going to get something out of this is if you are very familiar with the play and the text in general, which I generally am. Macbeth happens to be probably my favorite Shakespeare play.
Me too.
Yeah, and if you don't know the story, and you don't even know that little encapsulation that I gave at the top here, you're not going to really derive much from this. You're going to be very lost. You're not going to really understand exactly what's going on or what they're really prattling on about. Like I said, it's a bit condensed. It takes a long time to really set itself up, and then it doesn't really pick up the pace, even though it's all the sort of a major events of the play are happening kind of right on top of each other. So the two of them are really good. The monologue sequences are really well done. It's sort of like, it tries to be very, bloody. It doesn't even come close to Roman Polanski's version of Macbeth, which is, arguably the best version that's ever been done.
I agree.
It's not really a vanity piece. It's just, someone wanted to do Macbeth and I'm going to do it this way and I'm going to make the landscapes very dark and red, and I'll do the witches like this, and I'll just put them in the background, and maybe they're witches, maybe they're not. And then we'll do some 300-type slow-mo, action battle sequences But it's, I mean, it's much better than the Sam Worthington version that came out of some years ago. Much, much better than that version, which is a train wreck. But it's just, it comes down to, do we really need this version of Macbeth? And the answer really is no.
Can I ask, do you guys remember, and I can't remember the name of it, do you remember the modern gangster version that they did with Totoro?
Men of Respect.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I remember sitting in the theater, in the screening room, and I don't know if I had heard that much uproarious laughter, you know, inappropriate. Uproarious laughter at a screening. I mean, it was one of those screenings where you just, like, everybody in the room is just beside themselves.
Yeah.
That is.
Here's the funny thing about that particular one, just in my own history.
Yeah.
And that when we were studying Macbeth in high school, Men in Respect was just coming out or had just come out. And we actually used that as a template not to study Macbeth, but to actually do our own version of Macbeth. So we did this whole video for our English class that was like a 45-minute version of Macbeth that was much better than Men of Respect, by the way.
Yeah.
But we actually used footage from Men of Respect.
Did you really?
In the thing. It was a modern-day gangster thing.
Yeah. Well, by the way, I love the fact that both of you immediately remembered the name of that movie. I didn't even get Totoro out of my mouth, and you guys, in Men of Respect. Yeah. I was like, oh.
Peter Boyle as Duff.
Around the Duff.
I'm sorry?
Peter Boyle was Macduff.
Peter Boyle. And who was, who else was in that? I don't even remember. God, what a terrible movie.
Rod Taylor was Duncan. Not Rod Taylor. Rod Steiger.
Rod Steiger. Oh, okay. All right.
Steiger.
Okay, well, don't see the new version there. There it is.
Yeah, no.
No. Okay. Eric, Colin, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, Eric Childress, Colin Suter are with me. It's the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. We got a break for the news here when we come back right here on 720 WGN. Morning, Nick DeGilio here on 720 W. I have no idea why I said that like Johnny Olsen on The Price is Right. No idea. I'm an idiot. 312-981-7200 is the phone number and text number, 312-981-7200. Check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show and Facebook.com/Nick D Show. And it's the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. All right, well, let me cover a movie that the other two of you guys haven't seen. and by the way, this is longer. This movie has a longer running time than the one you're just talking about, and it's an Adam Sandler movie. All right, so for those of you who don't know, Adam Sandler, he doesn't have an exclusive deal with Netflix, does he? Like his movies, I mean, he will have movies.
He can still do other studio movies.
Yeah, because he already
has like a 3 or 4 picture deal or something with Netflix.
Okay, because obviously he can do other studio movies because he did 2 of them already this year.
Yeah.
With Pixels and the Transylvania movie.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, here's his latest one. It's his first Netflix movie, and I was the only one gutsy enough to watch it. I will say this, not all of it. it is the his he's so Adam Sandler now has stunk up the movie theaters. Now he's going to stink up Netflix. His latest movie is called The Ridiculous Six. Which is a takeoff on, you know, The Magnificent Seven and the upcoming Tarantino film, The Hateful Eight. So this is The Ridiculous Six. It is a Western, wacky Western comedy. And as we all know, Seth MacFarlane most, that it's really, really easy to do a Western comedy, especially because Blazing Saddles exists and still holds up, by the way. You could watch Blazing Saddles now. That movie's like 40 years old. It's still funnier than any kind of Western thing that you can do now. So in it, Adam Sandler plays this Native American who's grown up with Indians, and he is called White Knife, but his real name is Tommy, because doesn't he always play a guy named Tommy?
Yeah.
And he's been raised by Indians, and his father, played by Nick Nolte, inexplicably, shows up out of nowhere and says, I want to give you money for your Indian tribe, and I'm trying to write right. It was like when he showed up in Warrior. He wanted to write rights with his kids. So he shows up, and that he gets kidnapped by a bunch of bad guys led by Danny Trejo. And then Adam Sandler decides that he's going to go steal $50,000 from bad people, go across the West, steal a bunch of money to save his dad. That's the basic plot. Along the way, he runs into brothers, because evidently Nick Nolte ran around and had sex with everybody. So he's got five brothers, and they all sort of show up in different episodes. The first one being Rob Schneider, who plays Ramon, the Mexican. So we've already insulted, within the first 5 minutes of the movie, we've insulted Native Americans. Now they move on to Mexicans. It was only a matter of time before they got to Jewish people, they got to gays, and they get to African Americans. All of that is covered up, you know, within the first 10 minutes of the movie. So the six of them who are siblings are Luke Wilson, Rob Schneider, Taylor Lautner, particularly embarrassing in this movie, Jorge Garcia, and Terry Crews. See, isn't that funny? They're all brothers, see? And then the idea is that they have to steal a bunch of money from a bunch of different places to get the money and save Nick Nolte. Meanwhile, they're being pursued by these guys called the Left Eye Gang, and they're a group of bad guys led by Will Forte. And they all have gouged their left eye or their right eyes out and wear eye patches so that they can be the Left Eye Gang. And Steve Zahn joins the gang, and they're after them. You have cameos by Harvey Keitel is in this. And then you got the regulars, your David Spades, your Nick Swardson. Whitney Cummings is in this movie. Lovitz is in it. The one time that I giggled was because Norm MacDonald has one line in it, and he's Norm MacDonald. This is as bad a movie as you can possibly imagine. If you think it's going to be bad because it's an Adam Sandler movie, multiply that by 50. I don't know what the budgets are like for the movies that are Netflix productions. Is that Beast movie with Stringer Bell, is that considered the first Netflix movie?
I believe so.
So it was like a Netflix production. The money was put up by Netflix, and Netflix was the studio.
Right.
Okay. Well, this one just like negated any good any good feelings that you would have, and it makes me think that the Crouching Tiger movie is going to be horrendous if it's anything based on this. The production values look terrible. Now, granted, I watched it on my tablet, which is probably not a great way to watch it, but it was even more amateurish than a regular studio theater-released Adam Sandler movie. It's offensive. It's stupid. It is not funny. More than ever before, Adam Sandler is sleepwalking and cashing a check. Like, I mean, there's barely a performance here. People just show up and do, you know, try to do wacky stuff, and clearly everybody is in it just goofing around, and it, you know, doesn't make a lick of sense. There's nothing funny about it. I turned it off, and I couldn't believe it. I turned it off after the scene where John Turturro plays Abner Doubleday and they discover baseball rules as they're playing the new game called baseball. So doesn't that sound inspired?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, that's it. After the Turturro thing, that's it. I pressed stop on my tablet, and I was an hour and 4 minutes in, and there was 56 minutes left. And I was like, I'm done. I'm done. So I turned it off. It's as bad as you can imagine, times 50. One of the very, very worst movies of the year. And Adam Sandler not only is cruising, he's sleeping at this point. He's sleeping. Someone's pushing him. He's not even on his own anymore. He's asleep, and someone's pushing him through movies now. Terrible in terms of from script to performances. Lots of cameos, lots of talented people in it, all just wasting their time. And seriously, maybe the most embarrassing thing Harvey Keitel has ever done. And so, yeah. All right. Anyway, so that's the Ridiculous Six. It's on Netflix. It's Adam Sandler, and it absolutely, completely sucks. And I didn't even see the whole thing. So, all right, Eric, Colin, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right. We'll get to the movies that are out in theaters right after we take a break on 720 WGN. It's the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. Morning, everybody. We're back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN Monday morning. And you know that means the Monday Morning Movie Reviews, box office report and analysis, all of that good stuff that you love to hear on Monday mornings, we love to do. Eric Childress, Colin Suter, efilmcritic.com, RogerEbert.com. Rejoin me, and here we go. Let's get back into it. Hey, Colin.
Yeah.
Can you explain The Danish Girl?
She can't explain herself, so I'll explain her on her behalf. All right. Well, this is the true story about a guy or girl, however you want to look at it for now, named Einar Wegner. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that. It's been a long time since I've seen the film. Anyway, the first person to known to undergo a sex change operation, which took place in the early 1920s. He lived with his wife, played by Alicia Vikander, and they were both artists, but he was more celebrated than her. She struggled to be taken seriously. But one day she has him try on some women's clothes to be a model for a painting of hers, and he takes to it immediately, and he starts modeling her for her some more until he feels that, you know, he's more comfortable in that identity than anything else. He starts attending important art shows as an alternate person named Lily, and nobody recognizes him. And it sort of becomes his alter ego after a while, one that he can't seem to let go of. And she's empathetic towards it all until it gets to the point where it, you know, starts having very serious effect on their relationship. And that's the most interesting part of the story is you know, her reaction to everything and her sort of her empathy towards it. So, you know, it's hard to I really don't like having, you know, when I watch a movie at this time of year, we got, like we were talking about earlier, those big piles of screeners all vying for awards attention. You know, I don't like to have to view a movie through the prism of, you know, what will this get nominated, whatever that, you know, is it award worthy and all that. Just try to look at it as a movie, except that this is a movie that really is the definition of Oscar bait. And it's kind of hard not to notice it because it's really hard to sort of feel anything when you're watching the film. It's directed by Tom Hooper, who's an Academy Award winner for The King's Speech and also did Les Miserables and the great John Adams miniseries from a few years ago. So I like this director. I'm a fan of his visual style. He gives the movie an interesting look. You know, and Eddie Redmayne, Alicia Vikander are both very good in the film. So, but the problem is the movie is just, it feels like calculated Oscar bait. It's just kind of going through the motions of a movie that, you know, has a lot of noble intentions and a lot of good efforts made on everybody involved. But I just didn't feel anything, you know, during or after the film. I didn't feel like there was a real point of view here. It's got all the markings of, you know, an Oscar bait film. You got the, you know, you got the showy performance from somebody who already just won an Oscar. And, you know, it's a period piece, and you got the, you know, it's about tolerance, and it's got all these things going for it, except that it's not that memorable. And it's just kind of just sits there. I don't hate it, but it's just kind of just left me a little cold.
Okay. Eric?
I think I liked it less than Colin did, and for many of the reasons that he sort of talked about and that he's sort of struggling to find the words that, you know, exactly how to describe this film. And yeah, I guess the best word to describe it is kind of empty. You know, I mean, you don't like to describe a movie as Oscar bait. You like to think that a movie has, you know, greater intentions than that. You know, it's not like this is, you know, some just another Weinstein Productions, the Focus Features film. You know, they were known for doing a lot of Oscar films. But, you know, Hooper's got this, you know, this reputation now that he's, you know, he's going to be attached to these projects. And Eddie Redmayne is an actor that I've never really been a fan of. And it's probably, you know, and it certainly doesn't help that he's really sort of being acted off the screen by every turn by Alicia Vikander, who I think is absolutely the best thing about the film. There's life in her, and there's real sense of purpose about what the story is and what it's about and this relationship. The stuff, you know, the tolerance stuff doesn't really work. There are scenes in this movie that would fit right at home in Glen or Glenda. And, you know, that might sound insensitive, but, you know, turnabout is fair play, I guess. And, you know, if you're going to do a movie like this, you have to really, you know, treat it with enough respect. Don't just treat it with sort of the, like, oh, look, he is, you know, really liking the fabric. He really likes putting on the dress. You know, he's really feeling like a woman. You have to do better than that, because that's the kind of stuff that Ed Wood get raked over the coals for, you know, 60 years ago. So, yeah, I mean, and it all leads up to, you know, an ending that is really kind of patently ridiculous, and just sort of smacks of it. The ending of this movie reminded me of, like, any of those like parody movies that you see in, you know, romantic comedies that are having fun with, you know, Oscar bait and romantic comedies and whatnot. Yeah. It feels just like that.
Yeah.
This movie was, other than Alicia Vikander's performance, which is a lead performance, critics, not a supporting performance, it's the only thing that I had any purpose to remember after I left the theater. So, yeah, I did not care for it.
Yeah, I didn't like it either. And I know it's hard, Colin, you made a really good point about how at the end of the year we have a ton of movies that we have to see. You know, whether it's a stack of screeners on my coffee table that I have to get through before the end of the year, or movies that we have to go to in the theater. But you're so inundated at this time. When a movie like this comes along, its release date, you know, it comes out at the end of the year. It's got Eddie Redmayne and another really showy performance after winning an Academy Award for a very showy performance. You know, the topic is very timely right now, considering, you know, some of the news stories that have happened in 2015. And it just seems calculated to me. I know it's, you know, it's unfair to just, you know, review a movie and say, yeah, this movie was specifically made to win awards, but this movie was specifically made to win awards. I personally don't think Tom Hooper is much of a filmmaker. You know, I thought The King's Speech was a pretty good film, but I think that was carried mostly on the really terrific performances in it. Don't necessarily think that that's Tom Hooper's, you know, that's why it's, the performances were good, because I've seen Les Mis. So this movie, you know, Eddie Redmayne does what Eddie Redmayne, I guess, is going to do for his career, is like latch on to juicy, this performance will get me recognition and critical acclaim and awards. Those,
like,
kind
Jupiter
of,
Ascending.
which he should have been nominated for. I liked him better in that than I did in this.
More memorable.
Yeah, absolutely more memorable, yeah. Completely. But there's just something about this, you know, historically significant. It's timely. It's coming out at the end of the year. Ah, blah, blah, blah. It's not that good a movie. I, too, liked Alicia Vikander, who, by the way, what a good year for her.
Yeah.
What a really stellar year for her. For people are going to, after this year, people are going to remember that woman's name, and she's a terrific actress, and she's good in this, but I just think it's for naught. I was pretty much bored throughout the entire running time of this movie, and when it was over, I was like, great, okay, good. So we've got some Oscar nominations coming from us, from this movie, and I don't care. I couldn't care less. So no on The Danish Girl from me. News next, then we'll come back and pick up the movie reviews from there. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Welcome back. It is a Monday morning. That means a little bit later on, my dad will tell a joke. It's a jokey time, his 101st joke. And we will also have a Blackhawks Express, a very good Blackhawks Express to play back for you. But right now, as we always do, it's the Monday morning movie reviews. Eric Childress, Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com join me. Okay, let's go to the next Oscar movie. Youth. Eric, tell us about Youth.
Oh, God. Okay. Okay, well, this is a movie set around a very hoity-toity luxury spa where some very rich people are they're having a little vacay, a little chill time away from each other and together, actually. The movie stars Michael Caine as an aging what is he, a filmmaker? He's a conductor.
Conductor, right? Yes, he's a conductor.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen this too. And he's a conductor, and he's, you know, he's taking some time away at this luxury resort and whatnot. A friend of his is there, Harvey Keitel. He's a filmmaker, And he's working on casting his latest opus. Paul Dano plays a sort of a Johnny Depp-like character who is also spending some time there. Rachel Weisz plays Michael Caine's daughter, who's going through some marriage issues, and she shows up at the spa. And Jane Fonda shows up as an aging actress who has ties to Harvey Keitel and their past. Yeah, so you have a lot of rich people hanging out at a spa. And by the time this thing was over, all I could think about was that it was just sort of a very hoity-toity, pretentious version of the bucket list. It's a lot of people, almost sort of like they're waiting around to die, in a way, and having really pretentious conversations about life that don't really add up to much of anything. There's something about watching this cast together. I mean, Michael Caine is just about always watchable, even in garbage. The scenes between him and Harvey Keitel are at least enjoyable on that level. But to me, this whole thing just didn't really amount to much. And maybe it's just my sort of my own prejudice about watching rich people doing a whole "oh poor me" routine for 2 hours. And sort of relegating about what they, they haven't done with their lives, even though most of us could never afford this luxury spa that they're hanging out with. And so by the end, I wanted to forget this movie. I didn't care about anything that happened in it. Rachel Weisz's character is kind of an annoyance, and there's not much there. And I'm forgetting this movie already as I'm talking about it. So yeah, I'm not a fan.
Okay, Colin.
It's amusing that you don't like movies about rich people complaining, but you like This Is 40. But anyway.
Okay.
That's what I heard.
No, that was good. All right. You got to get touche on that one.
Touche, but that movie was funny.
No, it wasn't.
I thought it was. I know. I'm just.
Hold on. I'm sorry, Eric. You're only about, 6 months into being 40?
Something like that, yeah.
At some point, you'll realize that movie's a piece of crap. It'll happen to you.
Well, maybe. Maybe.
Okay.
But anyway. I like this movie a little bit more. I can understand your reaction to it, but it may have helped that, again, going back to the whole screener thing, our little dilemma, as it were. I think I watched it the same day as The Danish Girl and Suffragette.
That would increase the enjoyment. Youth is better than those two movies.
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, movies like that, and I think Beasts of No Nation was also one of them. It's like, these are movies that are aspire to be great. They're reaching for greatness, but they're using very conventional means to get there, and so they thus end up being not so great. This movie also aspires to greatness, but does not go to conventional means to get there. It's a very odd film. The way it's shot, the way it's edited and put together, it's not quite as straightforward the whole time as, we're making it sound like. This is a director who's clearly, inspired by, directors like Fellini and, other European greats that.
I just want to point out, he directed that weirdo movie with Sean Penn.
Yeah, that's what he did.
That This Must Be the Place.
Yeah.
Which was a weirdo movie, but I found strangely interesting. But go ahead.
Right. This is a different kind of sensibility, different kind of storytelling approach to this. That I found, to be quite refreshing. Again, maybe it's just the day that I had. But no, I actually thought, Caine is quite great. I mean, the whole cast, I think, is quite good here, and easy to watch. And I actually found some of it to be, moving and, reached me, themes about, youth and old age and, looking back in your life and, can you really just, retire completely? And I found all that to be, quite interesting and, interestingly presented. I wish I had had a chance to watch it one more time before we reviewed it. I'd have a much more specific review. But I think this is a movie that visually, I think this guy, you know, is a tremendous filmmaker. There's some very striking visual shots in this film that I was, you know, really found quite remarkable. So I like the film. I do.
I did too, Colin. I liked it too. I mostly because of the performances. I thought everybody in this movie was really good, and I think that they're going to be recognized. I would imagine they're going to be like I can't imagine Jane Fonda not being nominated for the movie because she's Jane Fonda. But and Michael Caine, is there a possibility that Michael Caine's going to get a Best Actor nomination for this?
No. Jane Fonda is probably the best shot this movie has for anything.
So I mean, I don't know. I thought it was well photographed and. I don't know. I enjoyed it. It was unique, but I got to say, you know, Michael Caine, Harvey Keitel in particular, those two guys are great. I like the acting. I did not, I was not bored with it, and I did not happen to watch it. I try, Colin, when I'm pulling the screeners to watch, I try to break them up a little bit. So every once in a while, I'll just return to Mad Max just as a palate cleanser. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I'm not. There's no way that I would watch Youth, Suffragette, and The Danish Girl back to back to back. There's no way I would do that to myself. But of those three, this movie by far is the most interesting, and I think the most fun, if you can say that. So I actually kind of liked it. I thought it was good, particularly strong performances in it. So that's Youth, which is out in a couple of theaters, and you'll hear more about it, I think, as the award season approaches even more. All right, Eric, Colin, hang on, guys.
Okay,
and we will take a quick break here, and we'll get back to the movie reviews. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. All right, we're back. Good morning, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here. 720 WGN, Monday morning movie reviews continue. We'll do a box office report with Eric Childress and myself, and Eric and Colin Suter and I are reviewing the new movies, and we are back. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Eric, tell us about The Big Short.
Okay. Well, as you mentioned just for the break, this is a film based upon the true story of the housing/banking crisis that just about literally bankrupted this entire nation. This film is an ensemble cast, involves a number of the various players who predicted and were privy to this collapse that was about to happen, and either people ignored it or they were just able to sort of take advantage of it for their own means. One of them was played by Christian Bale, a stockbroker/doctor, who is really sort of, at least in the movie, is the first one to sort of discover that a lot of bad loans have been lent out to a lot of working class and lower class people over the years. And when these loans are going to default, it's going to send the housing market into a free fall, which has been known for years to be one of the most reliable markets out there. Steve Carell plays a Wall Street guy who is a little bit more of a crusader. He's aware of things that bankers and stockbrokers have done over the years, and he's tried to fight the good fight in that regards. Ryan Gosling plays another broker who is a very slick guy who catches wind of what Bale is up to as he's, you know, making his ways around and planting seeds and, you know, shorting everything he can possibly find, every dollar he can possibly find on this housing market. And he sort of tips off Steve Carell, and they figure out they could make some money off this as well. And Brad Pitt plays a retired broker who sort of gets lured back into this by a couple of young up-and-comers who are trying to make their name on Wall Street. And one of them was a neighbor friend of theirs, and they sort of lure him back in to help them, you know, sort of process this big deal that they have coming up. So this film was directed by Adam McKay. And if you don't know who Adam McKay is, he's responsible for just about all of the Will Ferrell movies that we've seen over the years. He did Anchorman. He did Talladega Nights and Step Brothers. And he doesn't seem like he might be the right guy to direct this sort of movie until you realize, if you remember how the other guys ended, the Will Ferrell, Mark Wahlberg film.
Right.
which is a film that was set around the banking, nefarious bankers, and the whole plot was, about that subject matter. The end of that movie ended with a lot of banking statistics and how, the banks have basically screwed over this country. And it's clearly a subject matter that he's very passionate about, and it really shows in this movie. I mean, like I said, this is, a really terrific ensemble cast, and that Adam McKay, as a co-screenwriter as well, adapting a book by Michael Lewis, who was responsible for Moneyball, really does a fantastic job of laying out exactly what exactly happened. I mean, this entire topic sounds like a very dry thing that, might not seem very cinematic, even though there have been some attempts to sort of, play around, the subject matter. We saw Margin Call a few years ago, which I was not a big fan of at all. There's another, an HBO movie called Too Big to Fail. And these films were very talky, very, a lot of jargon that we might not really understand if you're not in this world. But Adam McKay does some really clever things in this film to sort of, with a lot of humor to get you to understand exactly what this happened. And while this movie is, on some surface a comedy in a way, there's a real righteous sense of anger that's really sort of brewing under every single scene in this movie. Either we're sort of tasked with being angry at the people for being aware of it and not letting people know about it, or we're getting even more angry at the people who sort of allowed this to happen with just no sense of anything but their own greed and stupidity. The performances are all really good. Christian Bale is really odd in a great way in this movie. Steve Carell is terrific in the film. Ryan Gosling is hilarious in just about every scene he's in, playing an incredibly jerky version of the character he played in Crazy Stupid Love.
Yep.
And Brad Pitt's very, very understated, and that's just sort of the tip of the iceberg as far as the ensemble is concerned. This is a really well-rounded piece of entertainment that really gets the heart of something that was, probably not understood for, for several years now. And I think this movie does the best job of any film that we've seen to date on it. I think it's actually one of the best movies of the year.
Okay, Colin?
Yeah, I liked it too. I think it's one of the things I appreciate about it is that it doesn't oversimplify. It doesn't dumb it down. It keeps the jargon and the lingo intact, even when I'm not quite sure what everyone's talking about. But it doesn't put me off. I appreciate that they're trying to be as authentic as possible with it, while still going, through, while still stopping to explain to the audience directly using a celebrity in an absurd situation. That's an Adam McKay flourish that I really enjoy about this film. I do think, this is, his first, semi-serious film. I do think there are other directorial flourishes that he has, some stylistic choices that he makes that don't quite work, that are more distracting than effective. One involving sitcom laughter, a laugh track that permeates throughout a key scene. It didn't work for me, but I appreciate that he's trying stuff like that for his first, dramatic outing. This is a movie filled with, great performances. It definitely, tells the story of, this thing that, millions of people suffered through in a way that I think is very clever and very effective. And also, still challenging a bit for those of us who are just not in that world. And, I appreciate that kind of experience. And I think Carell is particularly great in this movie. I think he's better here than he was in Foxcatcher last year. So this is, it's definitely worth seeing. Definitely one of the best movies out right now.
It's a terrific film, an absolutely terrific movie. And I did not expect it, because of Adam McKay, I didn't expect it to be As good as it was. I like this more than The Wolf of Wall Street. I think it's a better movie than The Wolf of Wall Street.
It is.
I think Adam McKay made a better movie than Martin Scorsese. That's all I'm saying. So, the performances are great. I really enjoyed the style of the movie. It's a very funny movie. It is a very, very funny movie on a subject that's not funny. But the thing is, it does not make light of the subject matter at all. There are big laughs in this movie, consistently funny moments, and yet the subject matter is never taken lightly. The consequences, what's about to happen, how it happened, it's all taken very, very, very seriously. But this is an incredibly entertaining film. And like you said, Eric, it's one of those movies where, like, you read about the situations, you'd be like, God, this is going to make a really boring movie. Like, I don't follow Wall Street, you know? I don't know what goes on money-wise. I couldn't tell you in detail what half of the things mean in this movie. But that's the movie, and I think Adam McKay probably went out of his way to try and learn about it when it happened. Like, I just have the feeling that Adam McKay, when all that stuff was going down, was like, all right, I got to read on what's going on. I got to read about what's happening here because this is ridiculous. And I think that's the feel that it was like Adam McKay was outraged as a guy who didn't understand it and was determined to make a movie where people could. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So very entertaining. I got to tell you, you know, the breaking the fourth wall, talking directly to the audience or to the camera, sometimes works. Sometimes, most times it doesn't. Sometimes it's a necessity. You know, depending on the material that you have, like, like a movie like High Fidelity, that book was written in that way. So it was necessary for Cusack to look into the camera and speak to the camera. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's very distracting. Not here. It works beautifully here, especially when Ryan Gosling, who is our main sort of narrator throughout it. Gosling is hilarious in it. And, you mentioned this thing, Colin, that this thing that Adam McKay does. The first time that I don't want to give away who it is or what they do, but the first time they cut away and, you know, like Gosling says, here, let me explain it this way or let this person explain it, I almost fell off my couch. I was laughing so hard. And it just continues that way. All the performances are good. Bale is wonderful. Very strange performance. Carell is great. Gosling is hilarious. All the performances are good in it. There's a real interesting backstory to Carell's character that I think makes him the most three-dimensional of everybody in the movie. But I want to very quickly before we get out of here, I got to mention Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt is great in this movie. He's got the smallest of the four big male roles, okay? But it is the conscience of the film. His character is like the soul and the conscience of the film. He goes through doing what he does, but points out how awful it is. Do you know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah.
And I love him for that. He walks that line throughout the entire movie. It is my favorite performance. Brad Pitt is my favorite performance in the entire movie.
Mm.
A movie filled with great performances, big laughs, incredibly entertaining, about a subject that I normally, like money movies and things like that, normally I couldn't care less about, but I had an extraordinarily fun time watching this movie. And the last thing that you would think of about a movie about the financial crisis of 2008 and about banks and money loaning and stuff like that is that it's funny and entertaining, and it is. And I particularly, very quickly, because we got a break, I particularly want to mention the scene where they're waiting for Max, what's his name, from New Girl. And his partner, they're in the lobby waiting for a meeting, and they discover something on the coffee table.
Yes.
And then something happens after, you know, like there's something, they look at the camera and they explain what really happened.
Yes.
Again, I was like, that's fantastic. That's incredibly inspired, you know, like take the movie cliche and then tell you what really happened. I thought that was great. I really like this movie. Terrifically entertaining movie and one of the most entertaining of the year. No question. So everybody should see The Big Short. Are you scrambling for the perfect gift this year? Something that your loved one will actually use? Well, how about the gift of a great night's sleep? Get everyone on your list a MyPillow. And if you act now, MyPillow will provide you four MyPillows for the price of one. Get two classic MyPillows, two go-anywhere MyPillows for the price of one. Buy now for Christmas, and MyPillow will extend their money-back warranty through March 1st using promo code WGN. MyPillow is the official pillow of the National Sleep Foundation. It's guaranteed the most comfortable pillow out there. That's why they've sold over 5 million of them. And on top of a 10-year warranty, MyPillow is so confident that it will be the best present of the year, they're extending their money-back guarantee through March 1st. Log on to MyPillow.com, use promo code WGN, and for 4 MyPillows for the price of 1. It's MyPillow.com or call 800-299-9579. That's 800-299-9579 using promo code WGN. Yeah. Monday morning movie reviews continue. Welcome back to the show. We're going to be talking some Christmas stuff after 4 o'clock and listening to some Christmas music. We're going to be doing a Christmas topic each morning leading up to the morning of Christmas Eve. We also have a copy of the Les Paul book to give away. Steve and Johnny have written a Les Paul book called A Little More Less. We'll give that away as well. And much more. My dad's going to tell a joke. We got a Blackhawks Express, all that and more. But we want to finish up the movie reviews with Eric and Colin. And welcome back, Eric.
Thank you.
Welcome back, Colin.
Hello.
Are you guys coming down to the studio next week?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, because we're going to talk Star Wars. Because there's a little Star Wars movie. And I can't believe I actually got tickets already for a Star Wars movie. I felt not good for me.
Good for you.
I'm going next Saturday afternoon. My parents and I are going to go, and even though I got the tickets, I'm going to get there like an hour ahead of time because I just have a feeling it's going to be a madhouse.
Good idea.
You guys just come down here like we did for the Indiana Jones movie in 2008.
Yeah.
You guys. Mm-hmm. Come on down, and if you've got Star Wars stuff, because we're going to take, like, because you know that picture of me and you guys with your Indiana Jones stuff.
Yeah,
it's a little dated.
Every time we do the movie reviews, and Dan posts it on Facebook, and then posts the podcast afterwards, he puts that picture up. So I think
we need a new one.
So yeah. Bring your Star Wars crap with you. We'll recreate that picture of me being stunned by the goofy crap that you guys had that was Indiana Jones related, and now we can do that Star Wars related. And I think I'll probably be even more astounded.
Okay.
By
I'm
the way,
at something right now.
Did you guys watch? Did you guys watch SNL this weekend?
Yeah.
No, but I did, but I didn't. But I did see the commercial.
The commercial.
That was the best thing in the whole show.
It was not a very good show, but that was by far the funniest thing on the show, and I thought that was real. I also liked Time to Bleed. I also like I Ain't Got Time to Bleed. I thought that was pretty funny, too.
Yeah, that was okay.
Colin, tell us about In the Heart of the Sea, and Eric, I am stunned that you didn't see this.
Well, I chose to see Gremlins on Tuesday.
But you made the better choice.
Thank you.
You did.
Yeah, by far.
This is Ron Howard's epic about what led to the writing of Moby Dick. At the beginning, Herman Melville visits with Tom Nicholson, played by Brendan Gleeson. It was about 14 when the events of the film took place, so it's all told in flashback. Nicholson was part of a boat full of whale hunters who were important because whale oil is, what powered the lights and everything. Chris Hemsworth plays the most experienced whale hunter who, takes the most risks and who leads the boat into some treacherous conditions. And Benjamin Walker plays the inexperienced captain who Hemsworth has to reluctantly take orders from. They set sail and come across the biggest of all whales, which basically destroys their ship and leaves them stranded to their lifeboats. And it, just keeps coming after them every time the movie gets bored with itself and says, hey, we need a whale attack sequence. Let's put one here. That's kind of how the movie feels. You're just kind of waiting for the whale to make another attack. And when it does, that's not very thrilling because it is one of the most over CGI'd movies I've ever seen.
Thank you, Colin. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I saw it in 3D.
So did I.
And I'm noticing that with 3D conversion movies, because it's definitely converted. The green screen and special effects like that stand out more. You can see the cracks more. But this movie is just so over-processed and just everything about it, nothing about it looks, nothing about it transports you or transforms you.
It's and to make matters worse, almost every shot, every look is the look of the film, like it's filtered through some like urine colored filter.
Let me just say something real quick, Colin, real quick. We have a shorter time to review this, so I'm going to jump in with you on this one a little bit. But I just wanted to say that it took, and I'm not kidding, the first time I saw commercials for this movie months ago, I'm not kidding, in a 30-second commercial, it took me about 15 to 20 seconds to realize it was a commercial for a movie and not a video game.
And that
holds up. You know what, man? That is exactly how I felt watching the damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, well, the special effects in this thing are just, they're just awful. And then to make matters worse, you got Chris Hemsworth at the center of the film, and it might be the worst accent performance I've ever seen. I have no idea what accent he's going for here. Is it Australian? Is it Boston? Is it just straight up American with little sprinkles of both?
Yeah.
He needs to take the Keanu Reeves route with his career and not do accents, not do costume dramas, and learn from this and just stick to, you know, Thor and all that other stuff. This is a really terrible movie, an unnecessary, exploration of Moby Dick that just doesn't feel like anybody was really interested in doing that sort of thing. Really bad movie.
I'm with you. It's a terrible movie, Colin. And here's the thing. I know a lot of people who have read the book, including the great Chris Duffy, who works here at WGN, who told me that the book itself is this incredible, really intense and terrifying survival tale of what happens here. And he's not seen, I don't know if he's seen the movie. I'll have to talk to him if he saw it this weekend. But he was looking forward to it until he realized that it was going to be rated PG-13 and that Ron Howard directed it. And evidently, there's some really awful stuff that happens in this book that doesn't really happen in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not translated in the film. It just, this movie to me, I don't know what it is, really. I mean, you know, I loved, by the way, I just want to mention this. Colin posted on his Facebook page after he saw this movie that you would have loved to have seen Alejandro Iñárritu, who directed The Revenant. Iñárritu walk up to Ron Howard and say, "Yeah, listen, I saw your little survival movie. It was really cute. Have you seen mine?"
Yeah.
I've not seen The Revenant, but it was, so I don't know. And I think the reason why this movie was made was because they were like, "Oh, look, Ron Howard, 20 years ago, you made Apollo 13, and that movie's about surviving. That movie's about people stranded, and they have to, you know, do whatever they can to live and survive and get back home." And that's essentially what this movie is about. But everything that people liked about Apollo 13, and I'm not a fan, I know I'm in the minority on that, is not present in this movie at all. I said, it looks like a video game. The special effects are terrible. The acting is ridiculous. It's just a bad movie. And Eric, we'll talk about the reception that it received at the box office and the thinking that they moved this thing from March.
Yep.
Not a good move. It is a bad movie. In the Heart of the Sea is a bad movie, and as I've been calling it Opie Dick, since its inception. And yeah, before we let Colin out of here, next week Alvin in the Chipmunks. That's the big one.
Right. That's what we're coming out of the studio for.
Yep.
And his answer to losing Star Wars.
And Sisters. We also have. Addition to obviously Star Wars, Eric and Colin. Are going to be joining me live in studio next week to talk Star Wars. And Colin, get some rest.
All righty.
And Eric, hang on.
Okay,
Eric is going to hang on. We come back, we do box office, and Colin will join us again next week. And they'll both be live in studio to talk Star Wars. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Hey, like us on Facebook. It's constantly updated. It's interactive. You can join us. We have over 11,600 fans on our Facebook page. So it's Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. And Eric Childress, Colin Suter review the movies with me. And then Eric sticks around because he does a box office analysis at movies.com. Let's talk about the box office, Eric.
Okay.
Number one for the fourth week in a row is The Hunger Games, the latest Hunger Games movie, which made $11.3 million. Bringing its total up to 244.4. But the big news is number two is In the Heart of the Sea,
yeah,
which made only $11 million. Tell us what the hell happened.
Well, I mean, no one wants to see Chris Hemsworth out of the Thor costume.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a big part of it. I mean, you mentioned earlier how they had moved this, Warner Brothers had moved this movie from March to December. When you hear something like that, you one of two things. Either the movie kind of stinks, you know, because they're pushing it back. Or two, when you move something into December, that they're thinking awards for this movie. You know, I mean, Ron Howard's had some Oscar success, obviously. And it's a big epic story and a true story and based on a book and whatnot. And it seemed like that was the right move. But this move was announced actually 2 days before a little movie called Black Hat opened.
Yeah.
And the writing was kind of on the wall that Black Hat was headed for disaster in a way. It was not tracking well. It didn't look like it was going to open well, and it probably opened – it opened even less than what people thought it was going to. And that was starred Chris Hemsworth. So Warner Brothers probably – you know, they saw the writing on the wall and said, well, let's move this away from this potential disaster and give it a little bit more time to breathe. And Ron Howard issued some, you know, more positive spin on the story. But that's clearly, you know, why they moved it away from March. They wanted to get away from Black Hat. Mm-hmm. And I thought this movie was going to win number one just by default. I mean, you know, there's nothing else new opening. All the other movies were, have been running their course for a few weeks. You know, I was not expecting much. I wasn't expecting this movie to make more than like $15 million, actually. But the fact that it couldn't even beat Hunger Games in its fourth week, Warner Brothers has had kind of an epically bad year.
Yeah.
I mean, this is going the 100 to 115 million budget, depending on which stat you believe for this thing. So this thing's potentially headed around, you know, your Jupiter Ascending, your Pan, your Man from U.N.C.L.E. disasters on the year.
Man.
Bad.
Yeah, not a good
Warner
year.
Brothers.
Not a good year for Warner. Well, except for Mad Max.
Yeah, they're going to get some Oscars out of it. It's going to be sort of probably their one saving grace is that Mad Max, and they're going to ride that train as much as they can. And they also got Creed, so Stallone's in the picture too. So, you know, they're going to get a little bit of reprieve here. You know, someone in Warner Brothers, I don't know.
Okay. All right. Number three, The Good Dinosaur with $10.4 million. And number four, Creed, the aforementioned Creed with $10.1 million, making it up to $79.3 million. Just doing okay.
Yeah, it had a bigger drop in the second weekend than I thought. The word of mouth, it's still out there. I just don't think people are thinking that they need to see it in the theater. Necessarily, especially with Star Wars coming out, everyone who is sort of holding back their money to see at least one movie in the theater are waiting for Star Wars.
Right.
So the word of mouth, you know, Creed is still probably going, it's likely still going to make $100 million. And you know, who would have thought that when they first announced the project?
Yeah.
So Creed's doing fine, and it's going to be a hit for Warner Brothers. So,
well,
again,
I hope it. I mean, I hope more people see it. We've talked about this, you know, over the past few weeks. How great a movie, and how surprisingly great it really is, and that people should actually go out and see it. I know that everybody and their mom is going to go see Star Wars this coming weekend, but if you get a chance, man, see Creed. And like, here you go. After you see Star Wars, go see Creed.
Yeah.
You know, Krampus, $8 million, bringing its total up to $28 million. Now it's about where it should be.
Yeah, but not a bad drop for a horror movie. So that's actually got a little bit of word of mouth too.
Okay. And we got the rest of the top 10. But Spotlight and Brooklyn continue to break the top 10 every week. Are they increasing the theaters for these two movies?
They have. I don't think Brooklyn is branched out completely yet. I think you're going to see Spotlight and Brooklyn sort of hang out exactly where they are for a while, and then they're going to ride this awards train into January, and then maybe expand a little bit more then.
Yeah.
Those are both very solid numbers for particularly Brooklyn. Those are very solid numbers for Brooklyn. Spotlight, clearly, obviously, probably Spotlight versus Mad Max right now.
Okay. That's amazing. And Trumbo, which got a lot of love from the SAGs and Golden Globes, surprisingly, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Is that going to pay off in box office?
I don't think so. I think it lost some theaters this week, and it's not doing particularly Well, if it wins something between now and the end of the month, they might expand it a little bit. But I don't know. The Globes and the SAG, I don't know. I was really surprised.
I was too.
To love the film. I know people love Cranston and whatnot. So, yeah. I thought he might figure into the Globes somehow just because they want to invite him to their dinner.
Yeah.
I don't see Trumbo doing very strong business after this.
All right, real quick before we let you go, I just want you to give me a number on how much you think Star Wars is going to make.
Well, yeah, this is a fool's game.
For the weekend.
I preach this is a fool's game. But it has. I think it's going to do more than Jurassic World, which was $208 million.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with $230 million.
$230 million. Okay, I wouldn't be surprised by that. I wouldn't be surprised if it breaks $300 million.
Wow.
I'm telling
you.
Yeah,
because the thing is, like, if you say $300 million and then it does, like, $270, people go, well, it's a disappointment.
Wow.
Yeah,
all right.
That's how people write box
I know.
Office columns.
I know. Okay, all right. Well, I said it. You didn't. You're the one that writes the box office column. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Well, all right. We'll see you in studio. Bring all your Star Wars junk.
All right.
And I promise, here's the deal. I promise to, I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know. I might like it. But I promise to let you guys go. You know what I mean? I'm not going to be a jerk about it next
you
week.
You did like the last one.
I like Sith. I did.
Yes.
I did. Yes. But again, this is, you guys enjoy this stuff, so I'll let you, you guys can love it. All right, Eric. Take care, buddy.
Okay, man.
See you later. All right, Star Wars, the big Star Wars movie comes out next week, and Eric and Colin are going to come down. They're going to bring all their Star Wars stuff, and they can reminisce and have a lot of fun. And I'll mock them. No, I'm kidding. All right, we'll take a break on 720 WGN.